Listen.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, the Seahawks super fan. Kind of got a bit of a night off. The Seahawks already played this week, already won this week, so I'm feeling pretty good. Able to put my feet up and just watch some really, really good games this weekend. A lot of close games, a lot of divisional games. Some really surprisingly close games, as a matter of fact. You'll hear all about that. There's also a firing of a head coach who is near and dear to my heart for his time spent here in Seattle. We'll talk a little bit about that later as well. And of course, at this point, there's going to be some talk about how the playoff seeding is working out. So I'm going to go ahead and turn things over to Nick. He'll get us started as we start recapping all the games in the NFL.
That's right. It's me, your Kansas City Chiefs superfan, Nick, and I am here to break down all of the early games and, you know, later afternoon games for you. First up, I am joined here by both of our superfans from the Eagles and the Ravens to break down the Ravens 27-26 win over the Eagles. And so we'll toss it to the victor here, Don. How are you feeling about this game, given the tight race you're in there in the AFC North?
This was just a weird win by the Ravens. They did not look good at all in victory. Ryan Matthews especially, they just got gashed in the run game, which is obviously this year especially is a real aberration. I mean, they have stretch plays, draws. I mean, they could run at will. What I don't understand, I guess, about the Eagles is, you know, 5 minutes left in the game, they're trying to get down by 10 points, and they're just very slowly, like, meandering, running their normal offense, which I thought was strange. Offense was okay. I mean, Flacco's late pick was just really inexcusable, just right to the linebacker. They're trying to get too cute. That was right after the big Mike Wallace play. Trying to get too cute, and then they take it back 30 yards. But, I mean, yeah, the win keeps us right in it. I mean, fortunately, Cincinnati – I could not pull one out over Pittsburgh, so it's do or die next week in Pittsburgh on Christmas Day. If we lose, we're out of the division race.
Well, at least it adds some lovely tension and anger potentially to your Christmas Day. But moving on to the Eagles side, for you guys, we've been talking for a while. I mean, the playoff hopes have dimmed, but this was an interesting. Your team showed some fight here. How are you feeling about this one, James?
I'm actually feeling better about this game. They showed heart, some grit. They actually fought through all the adversity, and the defense giving up big plays, which, you know, either were responsible for or set up almost every touchdown the Ravens had today. And Don's right. You know, the rushing game, they showed up today. Ryan Matthews and the coaching staff in particular, true commitment to sticking with the run. You know, 38 attempts for 169 yards, which is double what the Ravens normally give up on the season on average. Not much out of the passing game because, you know, the Ravens defense is one of the best in the league. I wasn't really expecting much, but receivers have to do a better job going forward as far as fighting for the ball when they get, you know, get in situations going downfield, 10 yards past the sticks. They're just looking at balls, hit them in the hands, or letting defenders cut in front of them, smack balls away. And it's, you know, that aside, you know, I know there's no such thing as moral victories, but I'm actually quite happy with the way they played down the stretch in this game. They could have easily given up with 10 minutes left, 5 minutes left, down 10. But, you know, like Don said, that Flacco pick to the Hicks, our middle linebacker, made a great read on that play. Got a nice run back, got things jump-started, and they made all the right moves. There was discussion with some other super fans about the bad decision to go for two at the end of the game, but you're on the road, you're struggling. This game was ugly on both sides of the ball, to be perfectly honest. And you want to get out of there with the win. You're on the road. You're going to overtime. You could easily lose that game if they win the coin toss because they have the choice. And, you know, anything could happen. So, yeah, this is the right call. It's probably a bad play. Baltimore just made a great play at the line to tip it. So.
And on Baltimore's side, it also just seems like, I mean, you mentioned it was a weird game. It seems like a weird game in terms of the way that the Baltimore offense operated in general. I mean, again, very effective with the running game, but it was basically nothing but big plays out of the receiving core, but not still a whole lot of completions. Flacco went, 16 of 30, so only 16 catches there with, you know, the leader officially being Mike Wallace with two receptions and 60 yards. I mean, what do you make of just the offensive game plan going forward?
they seem to try at least attempt to run the ball more. We talked about it on the Thursday show. It's a broken record. They always talk about we need to run more, run more, run more. They actually stayed a little bit more committed to it this week. I mean, Perriman had a bad drop. Mike Wallace had a route I thought he could have fought more for, kind of just gave up on the route. I mean, you can't really put that on the game plan, so to speak. But the Eagles, I mean, besides the Mike Wallace pass, obviously was a big play, but it was not it wasn't a deep ball by any means. It was a slant. He used his speed to get separation. As poor as the Eagles secondary has been this year, they never really, they didn't really test them deep very much. I mean, Steve Smith had the 36-yard touchdown, but they never test them deep. And I mean, that's one of the best parts of Flacco's game. It's what our receivers are meant to do is get the deep ball. They just never really attempted that.
Yeah, I was surprised by that myself. They didn't go deep more often, especially with Mike Wallace.
Yeah. Given that he's on my fantasy team, I was very, very surprised. But we'll leave the last word with you, James. So give me one player you're most excited to watch for these remaining games.
Oh, wow. I can't pick one. Obviously, I got to go with Carson Wentz just to see how he bounces back. I mean, he threw the pick early in this game. He came back, led them down the field, set them up for touchdowns. Ryan Matthews, with the injuries we're having now to the running backs, and the rookie we elevated today, Marshall, who had a very good game splitting time with him. Some pieces going forward on the offense are looking pretty good, but again, the wide receivers are struggling. But I'm definitely keeping my eye on Carson Wentz, which I know is probably like an easy cop out to the question, but he's our rookie quarterback. He's basically the future of the franchise, and how he plays down the stretch could bode well for setting up next season.
All right, good stuff. Well, thanks a lot for joining, guys.
Thank you.
All right, no problem. Thank you, guys.
Cheers. And taking a look at the Saturday night game, I have our Dolphins superfan Andy here to break down their 34-13 win over the Jets in New York. And so Andy, Matt Moore, 4 touchdowns, interception, seemingly a pretty good game. Do you think this is a playoff Matt Moore?
Well, I mean, he certainly looked good. He showed his strength. His strength is the deep ball. He's a very aggressive quarterback. He doesn't, in terms of pure arm strength, he doesn't have a great arm, but he's really good at throwing a 40-yard parabola down the field. He's just very good at that specific throw, and he hit 3 or 4 of those against the Jets. We'll see where it goes, in the future. I will say that Buffalo scares me next week, and they'll be fighting for – Rex gets teams to fight very hard for him when he's on the way out. The Jets beat us week 17 in both 2013 and 2014. Those were obviously Rex Ryan teams. And I think one thing that is worth noting is that the running game, again, did nothing. And ever since Mike Pouncey was lost for the year, Jay Ajayi, the bloom is off the rose a little bit with Jay Ajayi. But the Jets aren't good. I didn't really like what I saw from Petty. What do you think about Petty going forward, I guess, just to turn to the Jets for a little bit?
I think he shows his youth and his limitations. I mean, to me, he's like Matt Barkley in green.
I think Matt Barkley's better. Matt Barkley actually threw another pretty good game today. I think Bryce Petty's going to have a very nice career for himself. I'm pretty sure he's going to be an NFL quarterback for like 10 to 12 years. I don't know how many of those years he'll be as a starter, but he's going to get paychecks in the NFL for a long time. He's not bad, but he is limited in terms of arm talent, and he does lock on. Cameron Wake, believe it or not, actually did not have an interception in his career, 8-year career going into last night, and he picked off a pretty funny pass. So, and that, there were other miscues as well. We'll see where it leads here from here. Just really as an aside, why did the Jets play Matt Forte last night? The team is going nowhere. He's really old. He's banged up. He has to be on the team next year due to his contract. Why would they even put him in when Bilal Powell is looking like a budding star, really?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they just needed to spell him or something. But, yeah, you're right. That is pretty strange. I mean, they also were forced into some strange decisions when it came to their quarterback. They ended up bringing Ryan Fitzpatrick into this game. We did not see Christian Hackenberg. But given the I guess, how weak that offensive line has been so far. If they felt like Hackenberg wasn't ready, there's probably no point in throwing him to the Wolves like that.
Yeah. It is alarming, though, that Hackenberg was a second-round pick and they still deem him to be not ready. I mean, there's some pretty green quarterbacks that get thrown into the fire in today's NFL. So I think that is something to definitely keep an eye on. And I think, and I was talking about this on my Twitter timeline, I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is hilarious. I think at this point, he just basically trolls Jets fans just with his mere presence. I remember earlier this year when we were supposed to get an extended look at Geno Smith when Fitz was benched for the first time. Geno Smith's last 2.5 quarters against the Ravens, out for the year. Lo and behold, Fitzpatrick's back. And now Petty might miss time, Fitzpatrick's back. I just think it's hilarious how he's just a magnet to the football field, just making Jets fans miserable. And I love every second of it.
Well, and then back to the Dolphins real quick. You know, you guys have had some bad defensive games. This obviously wasn't one of them, but the Jets were still able to consistently move it on the ground and really control the clock. Didn't matter because you guys got all the quick scores. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, how are you feeling about the defense and the overall balance of your team there?
Not well. Not well. We've generated 19 turnovers on defense, and that's why we're decent from a DVOA perspective. But we give up a lot of yards between the 20s. We tighten up for field goals and we get a lot of turnovers, but that's not a sustainable way to play defense in the NFL, especially once we, you know, dare I say, we have a chance to make it to the playoffs at this point. And in the playoffs, whether it's Alex Smith, Ben Roethlisberger, Brady, whoever it is, the quarterbacks are just better. So if you're the type of defense that relies on turnovers and gives up tons of yards, that might not be a sustainable way to win in January. Very much like how, you know, in baseball, teams that hit a lot of home runs in June and July don't fare well in October. It's kind of the same type of thing. And against the run, I mean, I do like Bilal Powell. I think he's a good player. But, you know, he's not the first running back to get, you know, 18 fantasy points total against us. Kiko Alonso, broken thumb and all. He also has the calf. He's not himself. Jelani Jenkins straight up isn't a good player. Neither is Neville Hewitt. Dolphins defense is very soft and vulnerable up the middle in terms of both stopping the run, which we're 30th, as well as pass coverage against backs and tight ends. And it's going to be our undoing.
And maybe the Chiefs' undoing as well. But we haven't gotten to that one yet. Anyways, thanks a lot, Andy. Have a good one.
Take care.
And next up in our talking to Andrew in the back of an Uber series is the Buffalo Bills and their 33-13 win over the Cleveland Browns in Buffalo. And so, Andrew, you're a Jets fan, but you look at these Bills quite a bit. I don't know. It's the Browns, but what can you take from a team who beats the Browns by 20 points?
I mean, it was exactly how you thought they would beat them. They just beat them running it down their throat. Just as a frame of reference, the Bills had 280 rushing yards in this game, and the Browns had 269 total yards. So the Bills outgained them on the ground alone. The Bills aren't going to be able to do that against every team, but they're also kind of a matchup that you don't see very often. So if you're a team, I don't know off the top of my head, a team like the Broncos, right, who struggle to defend the run, the Bills could just run it down your throat. My problem would be is that the Bills' defense isn't as good as a typical Rex Ryan defense would be, which is why they're going to go 8-8, 9-7, and not make the playoffs, and Rex is going to get fired, even though he might wind up with a winning record in his 2 years in Buffalo.
Yeah, he's going to be one of those guys that continue to watch. And I guess just in terms of the way they play the game and the way that they scheme around keeping LeSean McCoy as their engine and Tyrod Taylor is sort of, what they're using for style points to get some stuff over the top and do some designed runs. I mean, is this an offense that, I mean, if they were to somehow sneak into the playoffs either this year or next, I mean, is this like a winter offense that can work in that kind of a scenario?
I don't know. I wouldn't pick them in the playoffs just because Tyrod Taylor can't throw in the middle of the field. If you look at where he throws, it's always outside the numbers because they list him at 6'1", but there's no way he's 6'1". And it's hard for him to see over the offensive line, over the defensive lineman. So everything is outside the numbers with him. Though he did have one really nice throw today on a 3rd and 20, on a 3rd and 22 that over the middle to Marquise Goodwin. But again, we always got to take all this with a grain of salt because they're playing the Browns. I I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. And even if they do, I don't think they'd be a problem for anybody. You're just getting sick thinking about watching the Bills in January, yeah?
Exactly. Well, and we haven't even talked about the most exciting team that was on the field in this game, and that's the Cleveland Browns. You know, when it comes to these teams, it's just sort of like, what player is key and will still be on the team next year?
Right. And that's the thing, because a guy like Terrell Pryor, a guy like Jamie Collins, they're both free agents, so they're going to have to pay up for those guys. Emmanuel Ogbah was disrupted today. He had a sack, and I saw him pop a couple of times. But when you're watching a game like this with the Browns, you're really trying to grasp the straws, you know? Like, you're really – it's difficult to find positives. But, like, you look at RG3's stat line, you look at Tyrod Taylor's stat line, you look at them, and you're like, they're really similar. They're kind of exactly the same. It's scary. RG3 went 17-28. Tyrod won 17-24. RG3 threw 196. Tyrod threw for 174. RG3 ran 8 carries, 48 yards, and Tyrod ran 7 carries, 49 yards. But the way they did it couldn't have been more different, because Tyrod always seemed under control, and RG3 looked like he was running around with his head cut off. And if I were the Browns, I would be starting Cody Kessler these next 2 weeks. I don't think RG3 is salvageable, and I don't think you want him to show any hint of upside to make you think that you're going to bring him back next year, because he's just not the answer. And maybe Kessler, who actually showed some good things during his short stint as a starter earlier this year, maybe he could show you some more good things, make you confident in putting him in a quarterback competition in training camp this offseason.
All right. Well, pleasure as always. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you, Nick.
And next up is the surprisingly close Green Bay Packers 30-27 win over the Chicago Bears. I'm here with Chicago Tom. And Tom, you know, I don't think anybody, including you, expected this game to be, you know, really such a nail-biter. But you got to be happy with Jordan Howard and the way some of these young guys are stepping up for you.
Yeah, for sure. You know, the Packers pretty much had everything to play for today, and you really thought they were going to come in and take care of business. And, you know, by the end of the third quarter, it looked like they had done that. The game was tied 10-10 at half, and then the Packers scored 17 unanswered in the third quarter. And you thought, well, the game's over. But, you know, the Bears, they have a lot of guts, and we've seen a little bit of it, you know, over the course of the season. They don't give up. But, you know, they really came back and made a game of this and came back and tie it up before Aaron Rodgers and the Packers pulled their usual, you know, finish at the end where the Bears couldn't finish. Of course, they're young. You'd like to think that that's the reason why. The Packers pulled it out with a field goal on a really long pass to Jordy Nelson, and they kicked the game-winning field goal with 3 seconds left. But, you know, for a while there, it looked like the Bears were going to take them to overtime and maybe even win this game. They had the ball for 4 downs starting on their own, on the Packer 4-yard line, and blew it. I'd say, you know, there were a lot of encouraging signs here if you're a Bears fan, but that's a team that's going to have to learn to finish. There's no doubt about it.
And so just looking at some of the individual performances, who impressed you most that was maybe a bit of a surprise on the Bears side?
It was, I wouldn't say I was surprised, but it was Jordan Howard. And I have to say, in some ways, it really had as much to do with how it came about as anything. You know, the Bears were not very successful running the ball through the first 3 quarters. They averaged about 4 yards per carry, and they had only run the ball about 11 times up to that point and really hadn't done it with much success. And, you know, with being down 17 in the fourth quarter, you'd think that you'd stop running the ball, but they did not do that. They picked it up. They kept running the ball, and they had a lot of success with it. I thought the Packers were a little bit soft in coverage to begin with because they were trying to protect the lead. They took some advantage of that, but Howard kept running and kept running really hard and really turned in a nice game at the end. I was very impressed.
Well, and the other guy that I think you have to be impressed with, I don't know where he came from, but wide receiver Deontay Thompson seemed to have basically all of his yards and a touchdown this in this game. Who is this guy?
Well, he's a kick returner, is what he is, and the Bears signed him to be on special teams. And a guy like that really is never supposed to see the field, but he did today. He's a veteran, and so he's a veteran backup. And I thought he performed really well, along with a lot of, you know, relatively unknown Bears receivers, with, you know, Kevin White being out, and with really, you know, almost all their starters. They got Alshon Jeffrey back. Eddie Royal's out with a toe injury, turf toe. Jeffrey really didn't do anything until the fourth quarter. So really what offense they had was carried. You know, Howard didn't do much till the fourth quarter either. What offense they had to that point was carried by a bunch of unknown receivers like, you know, Thompson and Josh Bellamy and Cameron Meredith, that a lot of people never heard of before.
Yeah, Bellamy had a really sick stiff arm on the goal line on his one catch of the day.
He absolutely did. It was notable. You know, that was a ball that he caught behind the line of scrimmage on a wide receiver screen from the 11-yard line, and he made most of that yardage on his own. He did a wonderful job on that run.
Good stuff. Well, thanks a lot, Tom.
Thank you.
And on the other side of the coin, we have Green Bay Packers' Brian here. And Brian, you know, this was kind of a surprising performance in that, I mean, obviously Jordy Nelson was great, but you guys were finally had a really dominant game on the ground. But how did this thing still stay so close in your mind?
Well, we really did struggle to string together long drives. It was a really kind of a frustrating day for our offense from a viewership perspective. I can't speak for what was happening in the secondary most of the time. You can't really see that from the TV copy. But, you know, it was another one of those instances where Rodgers seemed to take the snap and then just pat the ball in the backfield and wait for something to come open. You know, the Packers have really tried to run two totally separate offenses, and one of them has been really successful and one really has not been. And the one that has not been is the one I just described. When we try to move the ball with that quick timing and rhythm passing game, that is our bread and butter. That's been what's working so well for us over the last 4 weeks. And we got away from it today, and we almost lost to the Bears.
Interesting. So, like, what is the version that is you guys working? What is the missing link there?
I don't know if it's a game planning thing or what is the rationale behind the offense that we saw today. But, yeah, we decided to try to take deep shots down the field, and granted, I will admit it looked like it should have worked. There were a number of drops this game. Jordy Nelson had two pretty big drops. Davante Adams dropped two touchdowns. So this game could be much different than we're seeing here at the end of the day today, with the Packers narrowly walking away with a victory. But you know, it's concerning when you have a quarterback with injuries to both legs, having to try to dance around in the backfield and take off on scrambles to try to keep this offense on schedule. I'm super happy that we found a way to win, especially because the rest of the NFC North lost today. So we really benefited from kind of the downfall of the Lions and the Vikings. But you know, there's plenty of concerns with Green Bay too. We almost lost to the 3-10 Bears.
Yeah, and on the defensive side of that, I mean, are you concerned that a Bears team led by Matt Barkley and, you know, Jordan Howard and a handful of guys that, you know, we haven't really heard of before was doing that kind of damage to the Packers defense?
A little bit. You know, that third quarter, if it weren't for the third quarter, I would say absolutely. But we forced three turnovers in the third quarter, so it's hard to guilt them too much. I will say the pass rush today looked pretty poor. We didn't consistently pressure Matt Barkley, and he carved us up over the middle of the field. It didn't help that Demaryius Randall, he had a bad day today. Overall, long term, I think he's going to be a fine player. I think he'll be a pretty good starting cornerback for us, but today was a rough day for him. Lots of missed tackles. He got run over for a touchdown against an opponent that you wouldn't necessarily think of as being very good. But they made enough plays to win, you know, despite some of their foibles in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, and how are things looking now for you playoff wise, and how confident are you that this is a team that's going to be able to make some ruckus?
Well, we talked last week, Nick, about my confidence in this team for the playoffs. And part of that is just because I think we're peaking at the right time, you know, despite a rough outing today. Couple that with the Lions' schedule here at the end of the season, and I really like the Packers' chances of taking the division. We needed the Lions to lose to either the Giants or the Cowboys and also have Green Bay win for us to make the playoffs. They helped us out a bit in a big way today by losing to the Giants. So they're going to have a tough game next week, too, at Dallas, and a tough game at home against the Packers to end the season. And overall, I really like the Packers' chances to kind of walk away with the NFC North. We played both of those teams already this year. We split the division, or split the matchups with the Giants and the Cowboys. We'll have to see if the Lions can match us there.
Good stuff. Well, thanks as always, Brian.
Yeah, great talking to you, Nick.
And next we have the Pittsburgh Steelers and their 24-20 win over the Cincinnati Bengals. I'm here with Greg, our stalwart, regular Steelers super fan. And so, Greg, you know, the Steelers going up to 9-5 is a big deal in this division and in this continued playoff race. But I bet it's also got to feel pretty good to, you know, beat the Bengals at home.
Absolutely. Whenever you pick up a road division win, that's a big deal. Especially when it was a game that definitely emphasized the foot in football, with Boswell having 6 field goals from 40-plus yards. It was a frustrating day at the office for the Steelers, but it was a good one. They got a division win.
Yeah, I mean, talk about those frustrations. I mean, I think a lot of people were probably expecting Le'Veon Bell just to, like, carry them to the next round of their fantasy playoffs, but he had a relatively quiet day. I mean, it's a shame whenever we say, like, this guy had 23 carries and 93 yards. It's like, ugh. But this sort of all around, it was sort of a lackluster day. So what was stymieing the Steelers this week?
It was penalties and lack of penalties being called, in my opinion. Well-called penalties on the defense early, extended drives. I think the Bengals started the day off by scoring on their first 4 drives of the day. That's how they got their 20 points. And I think on 3 of the 4 drives, the drives were continued because of, a roughing the passer on a sack on third down, a defensive holding on a third down, those type of things that extended the drives, and that's been plaguing the defense all year. And then on the offensive side of the ball, the reason they settled for so many field goals is inexplicably, I don't know how, Antonio Brown had a chance to catch a touchdown in the end zone, and on one time, Le'Veon Bell got called for what I'm going to call a ticky-tack chop block on the play, and then on the very next possession, Antonio Brown's in the end zone fighting for the ball, and the defensive back clearly pulled his face mask, and the play isn't called. And then later in the game, Sammy Coates had his face mask pulled, and it wasn't called when he was going for a ball in the end zone. And I don't really get upset about penalties not being called normally, but it felt like every 50-50 call, just the Steelers didn't get today. And so that was partly why I think it was such a tough day for them. There were some encouraging things, though, overall. The Steelers only dressed 5 defensive linemen and lost 2 of them by the end of the first quarter, including Stephon Tuitt. And so they were basically playing their second-string defensive line and held the Bengals relatively in check on the ground. So that was encouraging, but also worrisome moving forward with the injury to Tuitt.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Cincinnati rushed in the end for just 28 carries, got 76 yards, so 2.7 yards per carry. And Andy Dalton had an up and down day himself. From your standpoint, like, what did you see out of the Cincinnati side? I mean, obviously this is not a playoff year for them, but and one in which they are disappointed. But you have a lot of these new pieces and young guys sort of rising to the top a bit. What should they be happy about?
Well, they should be happy with how competitive they did play the game. I mean, they took advantage of some of the opportunities there early. I mean, I think they did score all their points in the first half. But they lost perfect proportions of the game. Their defensive leader, he was out with what they might have thought was a concussion.
And then they lost Jeremy Hill for portions of the game. For he got kept getting dinged up, and that Rex Burkhart, I think is his name, their third down back or whatever, he's filling in for Dino Bernard. He showed really well. It didn't seem like the lack of A.J. Green was really hurting them that much. They were able to move the ball at least. And I think, you know, when you're talking about they're missing three of their best players right off the top there, and they didn't seem to really miss them that much. I think that's a really encouraging sign, showing the depth of their team. I think they have a really solid roster to build and rebound for next year.
All right, good stuff. And pretty much everything comes down to your game next week, right, for this division?
Yeah, I mean, officially, I guess, the Steelers have an opportunity where they could actually lose the game, but, you know, and hope for a miracle in week 17. But this is really, the Steelers could lock it up next weekend, which would be very exciting. You know, it's the way it's supposed to be. It's summer football. It's going to be on, I believe it's an afternoon game on Christmas Day, and it's going to be Steelers-Ravens. It's going to be great.
Good stuff. Well, thanks as always, Greg.
All right, thanks, Nick.
And we now move to the G-Men and their 17-6 win over the visiting Detroit Lions. I'm here with Sam, our Giants superfan. And so, Sam, you know, you guys improved to 10-4, and this has already been an impressive season for the Giants. Another solid win against, you know, a good Lions team at home. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling really good. It's a weird situation to be a Giants fan with 10 wins this early in the season. Usually it takes us at least week 17 to get 10 wins. We have, I think, the best defense in the NFL. I don't think anybody really should have a problem with me saying that at this point. We did a second straight week without Jason Pierre-Paul, holding a playoff team in the NFC North leading Lions to 6 points. We lost Norris Jenkins, who's been a Pro Bowl caliber cornerback, you know, on the outside this season. We lost him early in the game. We were able to compensate. I feel really confident. I really like this Giants team.
And, you know, I guess the other big knock against the Giants has been their lack of a running game. But Paul Perkins was running well, and overall the team did okay on the ground. How are you feeling about that side of the ball?
You know, I watched the game. I haven't really looked at the box score because I watched every snap of the game, and it didn't seem like they were an effective offense. We had one drive early in the first drive of the game. We drove the length of the field, scored a touchdown. Everything looked great. And then Eli Manning went to exactly what he's looked like for the first 14 weeks of the season, which is a ton of overthrows, being pressured, dropping a lot of, leaving a lot of passes short. And then we scored on one short drive at the end where Odell Beckham caught a terribly Eli Manning pass for a touchdown one-handed, which, you know, you're going to get, it seems like these days, you're going to get Odell Beckham scoring a touchdown one way or another. That being said, Justin Pugh came back this week and really helped the rush attack. So I have some hope, but it's really, I think, going to come down to this defense. I don't see a way this offense really helps us advance in the playoffs.
Interesting. And on the Lions side, this would have been an important win for them should they have been able to get it done. Other than just struggling against the Giants defense, what were their problems?
You know, I think they suffer from a lack of a playmaker in the skill positions. They lost Theo Riddick, which I guess may hurt them, but Anquan Boldin, Marvin Jones, Golden Tate, these are guys that will catch a ball for a first down, but they don't really make many plays down the field or after they catch the ball, or at least they didn't in this game. And I think that's what really affects them, because they have to have Matt Stafford execute 8 to 12 plays to drive to get them into scoring position. And against a team like the Giants, who they tackle well, they don't really give you many opportunities to make plays. I felt really confident going in. Anquan Boldin's a great player, but he's not beating anybody downfield. And then I felt confident with our guys on the outside, whether it be Eli Apple or Dominique Rodgers-Camardi or Janoris Jenkins, to match up well with the Lions team, and they did. And they forced Stafford to take these long drives. He usually got a first down or two, but then the drive stalled, and that's what this Giants team has been doing. So I think this Lions team is okay. I think they will ultimately miss out on the playoffs. I think the Packers are coming on strong. I don't think the Lions team has enough difference makers on either side of the ball. But overall, I think they're just like a league average team who, if you're gonna make mistakes, they'll win. If you play a really solid game against them, then you'll probably win. So it was a good sign that the Giants were able to close it out, get a late touchdown, and win this game by 11, keep the Lions to 6, keep Stafford out of the end zone in the fourth quarter, which he's been doing all season. So if you're a Giants fan, I think you walk away from this game as happy as you were after the Dallas win. think our offense needs some work. If you're a Lions fan, you're looking over your shoulder to those Green Bay Packers. If they win next week, then it becomes a showdown in week 17 for that last playoff spot. And I don't think you want to be going against Aaron Rodgers in week 17 with the playoffs on the line. So, especially since that game, and the game is at home, but, you know, that just means Aaron Rodgers gets to play in a dome. So we'll see what happens with those Lions. I think they're a team that, you know, the other NFC contenders really want to see, because I don't think they're going to make much noise in the playoffs, and I think the Packers are infinitely scarier. I think you'll agree to that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens these last 2 weeks. You know, but I don't think the Lions have a real shot at making a run.
And for the Giants, you know, when the Giants have won the Super Bowl lately, it's been when they had very good defense, some questions on offense, and they kind of snuck into the playoffs. Are you feeling the good vibes this year, or do you think they have more things they need to improve upon?
I don't see why not. You know, I think, I mean, the cliche Giants fan in me knows that, you know, we get in the 5 seed and we make a run. But, you know, we beat the Cowboys twice. They're the 1 seed. The Seahawks on offense seems like a team we should be able to stop, keep that a low-scoring game, and at a low-scoring game, you know, we can win. And then you have the Falcons, who really seem like the team that may cause the Giants the most trouble, because they'll put up points and they'll force the Giants to put up points. I don't know if the Giants are ready to do that, but in all our Super Bowl runs, we came up against those Packers teams who were able to score. So, you know, it's not much different than the other years. And once you make it, you have a chance to win the Super Bowl. And I think the Giants are a team that can stop any team. And with Odell Beckham, you know, he's worth at least a touchdown. He had another punt return called back on a terrible block in the back that didn't even really affect the play. So all in all, I think if you're a Giants fan, you know, we were the 30th ranked defense last year, and last year we were barely an NFL team. So you have to be happy with the progression of the defense. I think Eli Manning is, we have to take a real long, hard look in the mirror and see if he can still be an NFL quarterback. He makes about 4 out of 30 throws a game that look like an NFL quarterback, and the rest seems replacement level. So, you know, after I say all this, he's going to go into the playoffs and play a, you know, a flawless playoffs and win the Super Bowl. And then we're going to go through this for another 4 years. So, you know, there are worse things that can happen.
Yep, there certainly are. Well, thanks again, Sam.
No problem.
Well, there's no more hiding from it. It is time for me to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs' 17-19 loss to the Tennessee Titans in Kansas City. And, man, this was just a shoulda, woulda, coulda game. There are just so many moments in this game where the Chiefs had an opportunity to put it away, and they did not. In a lot of ways, it actually went almost exactly the way that James and I previewed it on Thursday. If you caught the preview show, you would not have been too surprised. The fact is that with the loss of Derek Johnson, this already not particularly great run defense was going to be in for a long day against one of the best running attacks in the league. The Chiefs just could not slow them down. DeMarco Murray ended up having 18 carries for 89 yards. That's 4.9 per carry. Derrick Henry was even more unstoppable with his 9 carries, but for 58 yards, going 6.4 yards per carry and 2 touchdowns. And the Chiefs got off. I mean, this was looking like this was going to be an absolute blowout. The Chiefs were up 14-0 early in this game. They won the turnover battle 3-1. And for a while, the Chiefs looked very good. They themselves moved it relatively well on the ground, ended up with 158 yards rushing. However, 68 of that was a single long run, nice run by Tyreek Hill for a touchdown. But Spencer Ware still had 18 carries for 70 yards, and also he had 3 catches for 25. So an all-around solid game for him. But, you know, I think with these gutty wins that the Chiefs have been putting together, a lot of Chiefs Kingdom has gotten off of Andy Reid's back and off of Alex Smith's back for, you know, some of the typical things they like to complain about with them. And I think they're going to be back for this. I mean, we saw some good Alex Smith in this game. Don't get me wrong. He had a beautiful, nice, deep 44-yard pass to Jeremy Maclin, who, by the way, Mac is back. He ended up with 6 receptions for 82 yards on the day. Some really good throws. But the other thing with Maclin being back and him being Alex Smith's favorite receiver, he also has a tendency to stare him down and use him as a security blanket, which he did again in this game. He threw a pick trying to get Macklin in the end zone. I think out of Smith's, he's got like 5 or 6 interceptions on the season. I think 3 of those are in the end zone this year, which is just really, really something we cannot see out of him. I mean, there's a lot of sins that Alex Smith and his play style, he can commit, and it is okay. He can be overly cautious at times. Okay. He can go for the short guy rather than the deep guy. Okay. The one thing he can't do in this ball control, win the turnover sort of turnover battle sort of offense, you cannot have a long drive where you get down and you throw a pick in the end zone and just get nothing off of that drive. The Chiefs had another drive where they moved down DeAnthony Thomas on a run out to the right side, appeared to get a touchdown. He got his legs inside the pylon, but the ref said that the ball did not cross over the top of the pylon. It went out of bounds. And so the Chiefs had like 3rd and 1 on the, you know, whatever, 4-inch line. It really should have been a challenge, but I'm sure that Andy Reid was thinking, oh, well, we're going to get it in no problem from there. No point in challenging this. But of course, 2 straight Spencer Ware handoffs to one of the best run defenses in the league. No gain, turnover on downs. So that was twice the Chiefs had it inside the 20, came away with 0 points. And as you can see with the scoreboard, ended up losing by 2. The reason why this was such a weird game towards the end, the things that we thought were really going to be key in this game ended up not being. Tennessee is a part of their comeback. They were down 10-17 for a period of time. They then score a touchdown and, you know, an extra point ties it up 17-17 with about 3 minutes left. The thing is that the Titans had no timeouts at that point. The Chiefs had all of theirs. So do you give the ball back to the Chiefs with all their timeouts and you have none with 3 minutes left in a tied game on the road? You know, the Mike Mularkey, he rolled the dice. He said, no, we're going to go for the win here. They line up for the 2-point conversion, and they get stuffed by the Chiefs. Really good defensive play. So, I mean, if things had stood that way, you know, the Titans would have lost. They would have just had, you know, their overtime, or at least their safe bet stolen from right in front of them as they were down 16-17. But the Chiefs on their following drive just could not keep the ball moving and ended up punting the ball to the Titans. Granted, they had no timeouts, but gave the ball to them with about a minute and a half left. And just like the other side of the coin, the other thing missing from a Kansas City Chiefs defense without Derek Johnson is we have no great coverage linebackers. We have no even, you know, above average coverage linebackers when he is out. And Delanie Walker was quiet all game, but he got some really key catches for that final drive by the Titans. They then get up, set up somewhere around the 40-yard line, the 35, and set up for a 53-yard field goal. Ryan Succop, former Chief, readies himself for the revenge kick, kicks it. It's short, bangs off of the pole, but Andy Reid had iced the kicker. And so he gets his second try, goes through, Titans win. And man, just so many of these close things. It reminded me very much of the Tampa Bay loss, but just so many close game, close factors that really just conspired for the Chiefs to drop a game that, of course, they're heavily favored in, and I thought, you know, they should have been more worried about. But this alone, pending what happens with Oakland, the Chiefs walked away from this loss feeling like they had lost the second seed and dropped down into the wild card. You will hear later in this program what would happen in the rest of the games, but your host and Kansas City Chiefs superfan is feeling rather, rather disappointed at the moment. And next up, it'll just be me talking about the Indianapolis Colts and their 34-6 shellacking of the Minnesota Vikings in Minnesota. And this was just a game where Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis offense, I mean, obviously by the score, just really came alive. Frank Gore was their bell cow. Didn't have a great average, but, you know, and even just his longest run of the day was just 9 yards. But they were able to run him for 101 yards on 26 carries. And Robert Turbin has turned out to be a pretty good pickup for them. He had 7 carries for 32 yards. He also got their 2 touchdowns on the ground. And Philip Dorsett had a really nice long touchdown. The other big thing here was it was just clear that the Minnesota Vikings offensive line has fully fallen apart. They did bring back Adrian Peterson in this game. I don't really understand why. He had 6 carries for 22 yards, just 3.7 per carry. He also lost a fumble that killed one of their many drives. Sam Bradford also lost a fumble and had a bad pick. It was not a very good game for Bradford overall. Although, you know, this has been a conversation happening on our Slack group back and forth. I mean, he's clearly not the biggest problem on this offense, but he also, his inclusion on this team has not been the difference maker that the Minnesota Vikings need. They fall to 7-7 and are going to have an uphill battle in the NFC North. But, you know, there are still some more guys that deserve mention. One is Anthony Harris. He stepped up with 15 tackles, 1 pass defense. Linval Joseph overall had a good game with 13 total tackles, but he also committed a penalty on their field goal coverage unit, which gave the Colts a free first down, which they were able to score on. So his costly penalty extended one of those Colts drives early on in the game. But the big thing here is, I think if you're a Colts fan, you got to be happy that if the planets do align and the Colts are able to get into the playoffs, I mean, if they can play like this, they can actually be a very dangerous team in the playoffs. Next up, they have the Oakland Raiders, which I would greatly appreciate them beating for me, but we shall see. And we now move to our Jaguars superfan, Ryan, to discuss their 20-21 loss to the Houston Texans. And Ryan, it really seems like you guys were doing well as long as your best player on the field, who was Brock Osweiler, was in. But once he got benched, it was a little bit tougher.
Nick, what's happening? Here we go again. That's a fair assessment. I hate to start with optimism, but I'm gonna do it. And by the way, before we exit this game, I need to have a word with you, so just keep that in mind. But the best player on the field also could have been Jalen Ramsey today, who had an awesome game and looked like the potential star we might see. But yeah, Brock Osweiler was terrible, and then the Savage came in, and he was good. I'm sure right now he looks like an upgrade. We'll see. You know, we can play the guessing game once again with the Jaguars. Nick, tell me what happened in the fourth quarter.
Well, it's gonna be either, you know, one or both of the two things I always guess, which is pick six and or hilariously bungled comeback attempt in the fourth.
All right, yeah, I mean, pretty close this time. Little different. We did, by the way, Jalen Ramsey, who got the interception. That's our first interception by a cornerback this season. So, week 15. So what it was this time is the Jaguars actually blew a lead. So instead of a failed comeback, it was a failed lead hold. See, I don't even know how to word that because I'm not used to it. 20-8 it was, and we ended up losing. And, you know, it would have been a win over the Texans, you know, division win, which would be nice, but hey, didn't happen. But also, Bortles did not throw a pick six, but just for good measure, at the end of the game, when it's pretty much out of hand, well, not really. I mean, we had a drive where we had a chance, but went backwards, and then on 4th and 15, Bortles, for good measure, threw an interception, his first turnover of the game, after otherwise looking awful, even though he had no turnovers before that.
Well, that's good. I mean, you wouldn't want to have a Blake Bortles game without an interception. I mean, that'd just be weird.
No.
But, of course, the bigger news than the result of this game was the fact that sometime after the game, Gus Bradley was fired. And so, granted, this is a conversation we've also been having all season, and it's something it seems like Jaguars fans have also. But, I don't know, I guess, like, how hopeful are you that the right coach combination or the right mix of new guys can come in and turn this into a really competitive squad?
I don't know if
if it's because I haven't lived through this for 50 years. Like, I know the Lions are having a good season, but like the Lions or the Browns or, you know, something like that. But I'm somewhat optimistic somehow. I don't know how, but here's why. It's just because I don't know how bad you can feel for a billionaire, but in my eyes, Shad Khan has made a lot of correct decisions and just has gotten nothing to show for it. And the correct decision to me was, one, letting Mularkey go after a year, which was rash. And I know he's having success this year, but I don't know. I thought it was time to get a new coach. And then, obviously, Gus Bradley was a terrible hire. But what I mean is the patience, because a lot of owners would have just, you know, like the Browns, just get a new coach every day. And I think he'd made the right move, which was being patient and seeing where this went. And he got nothing for it. I hope that all makes sense. So the other move that I think is right, and we shall see, is a big part in what he says, is that Dave Caldwell, the GM, will be driving the decision process for the coach. So I feel like he is keeping Caldwell, which I think is a good decision. Only time will tell. But it seems like Caldwell will stay, and then we just search for the coach. And too early to speculate on who. I would love a no-name who turns out to be great. Or, you know, if we get a big name, it'd be fun at least.
Do you think you also need to be searching for a new quarterback?
That is, I think, maybe even the bigger question. And I was thinking about that a lot today. Like, it depends on whoever the coach is, if they believe in Bortles, but it would be rough to get a rookie at this point. It would just be rough, because I feel like, especially the defense has made some strides, and then maybe the playmakers show up next year for whoever's at QB. But if we had a rookie quarterback, that might be going backwards. But then again, you look at the success of Dak or you know, somewhat Carson Wentz. Goff obviously struggled. I think Bortles is going to be back, but with competition. So to me, you know, if I somehow make the decisions, I would bring back Bortles, try to sign, I don't know, Tony Romo. He's not going to be a free agent, most likely, and maybe have to trade for him, trade for Garoppolo. You know, gotta get creative here, and maybe even draft somebody wherever you think, and just play the best guy. And I don't know, I'm throwing out a lot of options. I feel terrible about the situation. I feel like it won't be Bortles. I really hope it is him and he turns out to be great, but at this moment I feel like eventually he'll be gone. I hope I'm wrong.
And just real quick on the Texans, you said that the Savage looks pretty good. You know, how do you feel about them as being a team? You know, I guess if Tom Savage can play up to that level, I mean, are they a scary team in the playoffs?
Well, I think we have to look at whatever happens next week, because a lot of times, and this goes the other way too, but a lot of times you see the backup come in and he provides the spark and everything looks neater and cleaner and plays happen. And that's what happened in this game. I think next week is huge for Savage. I'm assuming he's going to start. I mean, I haven't seen anything, but I would imagine he is. I think that'll be the test, because if you looked at this game, you'd say, yeah, they look decent, they can make plays. And the Texans are a team that, if you just look all year, it's like you almost wonder how they got up to 8 wins, but they did it. And that's why weeks ago, like 5 or more weeks ago, Pod asked me who would win the division, and I still said the Texans, just because they just find a way to win. Now that I think the Texans can win the division with Savage playing QB. Are they going to make noise in the playoffs? Probably not, but if they keep winning, they deserve to get a spot, although that's still in question.
All right. Well, good stuff. Always a pleasure, Ryan. Talk to you next week.
Nick, maybe Pod will cut this out. I don't know, but I have a bone to pick with you for about 30 seconds. Not you. You're a fine person, but nothing made me more upset today than the Chiefs game, because all I have left in this season is getting the most disgusting football team on earth, the grotesque Tennessee Titans, which I wish didn't exist, who I hate so much. They got to win today, and they could take the division. against the Chiefs in Arrowhead. I'm so flabbergasted and outraged, and I won't be able to handle it if the Titans get in the playoffs. I'm needy here emotionally, and I wanted the Chiefs so bad.
Yeah, well, imagine how I feel about it.
Yeah, true. All right, well, that I had to get my feelings out there. Okay.
Yeah, no, fair enough. It is going to be interesting. I actually think, I think the AFC South, at least for these next couple of weeks, is going to be fairly interesting. And you're welcome for that.
Yeah, yeah, thanks. Go not Titans. I don't even care who else it is. All right, good talking with you as always.
All right, cheers, man.
Bye.
And next up is the Atlanta Falcons and their 41-13 win over the San Francisco 49ers. I'm here with a fairly content Falcons superfan, Tim. How's it going, Tim?
It's going pretty good. I like playing against the NFC West.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, it just seemed like another, just basically another business trip for you guys. I mean, what are your takeaways in terms of how the team put it together this time?
I mean, this time we just pounded the ball, man. We had almost as many rushing yards as the 49ers had yards. Like that's phenomenal. I think it's the first time all year that we've gone over 200. I mean, Devontae Freeman himself was almost, I want to say around 150 and 3 touchdowns. So if you had him in fantasy football, good for you. I mean, just on the whole, just a really, really good, strong, just total complete win. And I mean, putting up 21 points, 21-0 in the first quarter. I mean, things are going to end pretty well for you. Now, you know, I mean, a couple downsides for the Falcons. We did lose 2 rookies to injury. Austin Hooper, some sort of leg injury in garbage time, too. Really frustrating. He was just out there to get some more reps. And Devondre Campbell, our 4th-round rookie linebacker, who's been actually playing really well, left the game with a concussion. So we'll see if he's ready for Saturday. So coming on the short week, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how we're able to turn this around. But, you know, I like seeing the Falcons put up 40-plus points 2 weeks in a row without Julio Jones. And I don't think that's something that, you know, a lot of people are realizing, is that, you know, we're actually doing this without arguably our best player. And it's crazy to think that this year maybe our best player actually is Matt Ryan.
That is interesting. When you also have some guys standing up on defense as well, granted, again, against the 49ers, but I imagine you wanted to give a little shout-out to Vic and Keanu.
Yeah, Keanu Neal, you know, phenomenal game. Don't Google Keanu Neal hand injury, though. Oh, my God. He dislocated a finger today. Don't look at the picture. It's really terrible, so I'm warning all of you. And Vic Beasley, ladies and gentlemen, your NFL sack leader right now with 14.5 sacks, Vic Beasley. Kind of flying under the radar because Von Miller didn't get a sack today. They were tied going into today's game. Very, very proud of our second-year kid that a lot of people thought was going to be a bust. But, man, it's really, really nice to see the young players putting it together and playing really well. Now, again, the last 2 weeks have been against bad teams. I'll give you that. And the next 2 games are against bad teams where we have Carolina in Carolina and then the Saints at home to finish out the year. So, you know, would love to see us get to 11-5, you know, contend for a home game or a bye week even. So, it's possible coming up here shortly. So, go Cowboys tonight. Please beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm really tired of seeing them hang around. But all in all, just a really fun win.
Nice. And on, you know, looking at a team that is pretty much on the opposite end of the spectrum of you guys, if you're a 49ers fan, or if you're just looking at this franchise in general, what are these pieces do you throw overboard and what do you keep?
Oh, I mean, Carlos Hyde is good. That's about it. I mean, that team is, I mean, just watching them, it's like, who on the team is even good? Like, is Navarro Bowman even in the league anymore? Like, is he injured for the year? Did he quit like the rest of the linebackers, you know, going into this year? I mean, you can look forward to the fact that you're most likely going to have the number 2 pick. And, you know, I guess what? That's going to be Deshaun Watson out of Clemson. Like, I mean, Colin Kaepernick is bad. Blaine Gabbert's always been bad. So do they just restart and find another quarterback? But there's so many holes. And, like, the front office is terrible. Your coach is garbage. Like, I just, if I'm a 49ers fan, like, all right, cool, we have a beautiful stadium. I'm never going to go see it.
All right. So, just Carlos Hyde and pink slips all around for everybody else.
Essentially, yeah. Why not?
All right. Cool. Well, I look forward to continuing to talk to you. Hopefully, we'll both be on these postseason podcasts and into the offseason where we get to discuss watching the 49ers fire everybody. Have a good one, man.
You too, Nick.
Cheers. We now move to the New Orleans Saints and their 48-41 win over the Arizona Cardinals in the desert. I am here with our Saints superfan, Chris. And Chris, this was just another, we had a couple of weeks here with the Saints. It was just things were not clicking. They seemed to be tripping over themselves. And this is the Saints that we've been missing for stretches of the season.
Yeah, it's nice to see Breeze find the end zone and not the secondary. Unfortunately, for many fantasy football owners, week too late. But it's definitely nice to see him get rolling again.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you mentioned Breeze. He went 37 of 48 for 389 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. Brandon Cooks had himself a crazy fantasy day and real football day. 7 receptions for 186 yards and 2 touchdowns. Mark Ingram was also good in this game. He had 17 carries for 78 yards. So you just have all of these talent. I mean, like, I don't know. It's got to be a weird feeling if you're a Saints fan, just seeing how much you can obliterate teams, but knowing that you're probably not going to be playing, meaningful January football this year.
Well, being a Saints fan is, I think, best described as freezing to death. You just get this weird, warm feeling and nothing matters anymore. Everything's kind of numb. You have no expectations. It is what it is. We've seen 3 years of this. The defense gave up a lot of points today. It's obviously something that needs to be addressed in the offseason.
Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to bring up, because at least someone posted in our Slack group, but apparently there are rumors going around that the Saints are considering trading Sean Payton. Just what are your thoughts on that?
There's another splash report out that Saints are basically willing to take a ham sandwich for Sean Payton. We had the same reports last year, and they gave him a $40 million contract extension. I don't expect anything to happen. It is that time of the year. I don't know why Sean Payton is such a lightning rod for these, but there's always splash reports. Last week we were giving away Brandon Cooks in Austin. Cooks and Payton have come out and squash that. It is what it is. He's a talented coach, the talented team that lost. So it's going to give the Jason Michael Flores something to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what are you looking at right now as a Saints fan? I mean, you have some veteran pieces and some relatively young pieces here. You guys had been in salary cap hell for a while, but how do you feel like this team is built in terms of being able to get another good shot at making a run next year?
I like it. I might just be a Homer Saints fan in this, but we're rebuilding. We've been rebuilding. It doesn't happen overnight. And there's a lot of youth that's playing well. Michael Thomas continues to play well week in and week out. Breeze, I'll tonight put to sleep the narrative that he's on the decline, which Luckin Cora mentioned. We can get there. We need a strong offseason. We need a strong offseason on the defense. Nick Fairley is somebody who it's going to cost a lot of money to retain, but he's earned it. He came up huge today. He just played out of his mind this season. And he and Rankins and Jordan give us 3 really talented defensive linemen. We need to find a 4th. Unfortunately, we start 4 of them. I think if we can fix that and get some of these corners back, get the secondary rolling again, we got a real shot in the next year or two.
Mm-hmm. And I guess looking at the other side, just what did you see out of the Cardinals? This has also been a disappointing year for them, but they also have some big name talent. I mean, of course, David Johnson probably being the biggest among them. What do you make of the Cardinals this year, and how hopeful should they be?
It's a hard judgment with them on this game because you could tell Peterson was not at his best today. The Honey Badger was still very hampered. He looked very slow. Cooks just torched him on that second touchdown he had. This team has talent. They just need to, they like the Saints, have some glaring holes. You know, neither team really generated much of a pass rush. Both of them seem to have it on the offensive line. So I think with that, the Cardinals, you know, it was just last year they were, I think, like 11-2 at one point last season. So there's talent. They can do it. They just need to do something quick because Palmer, you may not get a lot more years out of him.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thanks a lot, Chris.
Always a pleasure.
And next up, we have the New England Patriots, who won 16-3 over one of my AFC West rivals, the Denver Broncos, but not the one that I needed to lose this week, of course. Either way, I am here with our Denver superfan, Lewis. And so, Lewis, only 3 points. What happened in this one? You guys were at home.
Yeah, I mean, we really couldn't just finish off any drives whatsoever. We were able to move the ball a little bit, but either penalties or drop passes or turnover in the red zone really hurt us this week. And it's unfortunate that we only put up 3 on the board. Our defense played really well, and it's a tough one to swallow.
Yeah, you also had Jordan Norwood putting the ball on the ground. I mean, just, I guess, how much of this do you blame yourself, and how much of this was, do you think was the Pats playing good Pats ball?
I mean, I don't know. I think it was a little bit of both. I don't think the Patriots played their best ball, but they deserve to win. Like, we just self-destructed. I mean, we stopped Brady off the back, and then we got a fumble on the first punt of the game. And there were miscues. I mean, Brady started off, like, 0-for-6 passing, but we couldn't really stop the run. And once Brady got into a rhythm, they were able to keep drives going, and we just weren't. And that was really what dictated the game.
And, I mean, like, what do you say from the Patriots side? I mean, the Pats now improved to 12-2. They're pretty much, they would have to, I think, lose the remaining 2 games and have some other weird stuff happen for them not to be the number one seed. And no matter what, I think they're going to be at home with a bye. I mean, do they seem like the best team in the AFC to you?
I don't know. I mean, if you have to go through Foxborough, I definitely have to put them as the favorite. But, I mean, this isn't the best Pats team that we've seen throughout the years that we're able to win championships. But, I mean, I think if they get the number one seed, they have to be the favorite. But, I mean, they're beatable, but they're still a very good football team.
And as for the Broncos and their playoff hopes, where do things stand? I mean, how hopeful are you that they still find their way in?
Not very hopeful. I mean, we're 1 game back on Miami, and they play, they play Buffalo and New England. We still have Oakland and Kansas City, so it's not looking too great for us. We would need to win 2 and then lose 1. Then there are other teams like the Titans and, I don't know, Baltimore and Pittsburgh, so it's I don't think we're going to be able to pull it out this year.
And so just how do you feel about your season so far? I mean, from the standpoint of you guys went through, I mean, there's always, you know, seems to be a disappointing season following the Super Bowl winners, but on top of it, you guys had a lot of turnover at quarterback and other stuff going on. Assuming you say that you split the last 2 games or something like that, you end up 9-7, like, is this still a season in which you're building towards things, or are you worried that this is a team on the decline?
No, I mean, I honestly think we wasted a year. I think we were talented enough to make the playoffs. I just think things didn't bounce our way, and it happens. I think we're a very talented football team, and it's unfortunate that we're probably on the outside looking in. I don't think it's like a rebuild thing. I think another year, possibly with Trevor, will do him good. I mean, we have to get the offensive line fixed, running game fixed, but, I mean, I've been saying that for 2-3 years, so I don't really know, but I mean, we have the talent on defense definitely to contend, and I kind of see it as a wasted year, honestly.
All right. Well, I do look forward to playing you guys on Christmas Day, and I look forward to battling you through this week over that. Either way, tough loss, but talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. This is Justin, the Seahawks fan. I'm here with Monty, the Raiders superfan, who's having about as good of a weekend as possible. Monty, how are you feeling right about now?
I am feeling fantastic. I'm having about as good a weekend as you could have, but I am a man of my word, and there's one small piece of business that I need to take care of. And from what I can tell, in Kansas City, there were just not quite enough of the old touchdown Kansas City today. And thank goodness none of you computer guys can turn that into a drop for the show. So, yeah, settle the bet with Nick, and everyone lost except for the Raiders. So things are going fantastic today.
Yeah, I think I'm going to maybe make turning that into a drop my Christmas present for Nick for part of
gross.
It.
Gross.
But yeah, I mean, that's huge, though. I mean, the Broncos lost, the Chiefs lost. The Raiders were in a dogfight of a game, though. You know, division game, you kind of expect it. Raiders do come out on top, though, 19-16. So just, you know, overall thoughts of this game.
The biggest part of this game was the first half. The Raiders were doing everything in their power to make it into a dogfight. Latavius Murray fumbled in the red zone. Derek Carr threw a pick in the red zone. So the Raiders were, you know, moving the ball fairly easily. Not easily, that's not the right word, but I mean efficiently, you know, like they were making some plays, they're moving the ball, they're in the red zone, but they kept turning it over, so they just never could quite get on top. The Chargers had the lead in the third quarter. The Raiders all season long have been playing terribly in the third quarter, which is why they have so many of these fourth quarter comeback type games. And I think, you know, one of the biggest takeaways that I'm sure you'll read it on the internet if you haven't already is first time since 2002 that the Raiders are going back to the playoffs. And the only person on the team who was around back in 2002 was Seabass. And he had a pretty big game today, made all of his field goals. So, you know, cheers to Sebastian Janikowski and cheers to Raiders Nation back to the playoffs, man. It's been a long time. Feels good.
Yeah, Sebastian had a great day. He, like you said, he hit four field goals. You know, he was a huge, huge part of the game today, which is funny because he is the one guy who's been around since last time they went to the playoffs. I saw it posted on Facebook today that it's been so long since the Raiders have been to the playoffs. This is the first time it's ever been possible to post to Facebook that the Raiders are going to the playoffs, which I got a pretty good chuckle out of. I want to talk a little bit about Latavius Murray. You know, he only had 13 carries, but man, when he did get the ball, he seemed to be awesome. Had 81 yards, average over 6 yards per carry. You know, we've kind of talked about him a little bit before, but I'm starting to come around on him. I wasn't real high on him, but I'm starting to think he might be a pretty good player.
I think, I mean, so those fumbles aside, he's actually had a really awesome year as far as, you know, hanging onto the ball. But what catches me about Murray, obviously he's big and he's fast, but he's actually got pretty good hands. He makes a couple, a few plays out of the backfield. He didn't have very many receptions today, but that is part of the game plan. But when he really shines is when the Raiders have a bit of a lead and they can just kind of line up behind that huge offensive line and go for it. They did not have that opportunity today, so he only had the 13 carries. But, you know, when the Raiders play with a lead, that is kind of, you know, he's the perfect back for that. I think Murray, it's going to be interesting to see what they do this offseason. I think he's up for free agency, whether or not he's going to go chase some big dollars or stick around with this offensive line and kind of enjoy some of the success that he had. Another big player who jumped out today, someone who you're pretty familiar with, Bruce Irvin. Khalil Mack did not continue his consecutive games with the sack streak, but Bruce came through with two huge sacks, forced a fumble, and kind of sealed the game there at the end. I think you and I have been on the podcast. I thought that was a huge free agent signing for the Raiders. Say what you want to, whether or not he was worth the money that he had that he got, but he's had a very productive season, and I'm definitely a huge fan and very happy that he's on my team right now.
Yeah, you can make the case that today he was the best defensive player on the field for either team. I mean, just look at his line. He had six tackles. He had two sacks, two tackles for loss, three hits on the quarterback. That's a disruptive force. I mean, that's a single player that's affecting the trajectory of the entire football game. I mean, you know, if you want to look at the fact that, you know, Philip Rivers had an okay but not great day, that's why. I mean, Bruce Irvin was a one-man wrecking crew. And especially on a day where, I don't know if it's like scheme or what, where they kind of contain Khalil Mack, that's exactly why you brought him in. And, you know, that physical ability is what made him, you know, such a standout here in Seattle. Speaking of NFC West transplants, Michael Crabtree, who was really great for the first half of the year, had a couple so-so games, had another really good game today, including what I think you and I have been observing out of him all year long, which is an incredible catch in the end zone. Talk to me a little bit about his performance today.
Yeah, the catch was amazing, but just in true Next Fan Up fashion, ever since I was talking him up, he had another huge drop in the first half of the game. The Raiders offense was struggling. He had a huge drop. They ended up punting, and I was just kind of waiting for Neil to start chiming in and give me the business. But he redeemed himself early in the second half with just an amazing catch. I mean, it was all over Twitter. Every Raiders fan and their grandma was tweeting about just a great play. Crabtree made in, and that's kind of his MO, man. He's got he's had some drops, but I will say this, that he did have an injury last week where they had some x-rays on his fingers, so he is dealing with an injury. So if he can continue to make huge catches in the back of the end zone for a touchdown, I'm going to give him a pass on the occasional drop until his finger is back to 100%.
So let's talk about Derek Carr a little bit. A couple weeks ago, I think we all felt like he was probably the favorite for the MVP race. That pretty much disappeared last week, and he had a good, not great performance this week. What'd you see out of him? Is he, you know, is the finger affecting him? What are you seeing from Derek Carr?
So it's been a few weeks now removed from the finger, and I don't know if that injury is still bothering him or whatnot, but I will say that the last two games, right, the Thursday night game in Kansas City and then this game, were just huge games for the Oakland Raiders. Like, if they could have won an Arrowhead, that would have put them in the driver's seat for the division. By winning today, it puts them in the playoffs for the first time in over a decade, and the Raiders were just not crisp. They were not sharp. They didn't come out. Like, in the first quarter, you kind of expected that offense to kind of, all right, guys, everything's on the line, let's go. And for 2 weeks in a row now, the Raiders have kind of looked lackluster. They're not putting up their 400 yards of offense. They're not putting up 30 points a game. Going into the playoffs, it's just a little bit concerning, you know. Granted, the weather's going to change. Games are going to tighten up. I don't expect them to put up just gaudy numbers, but I just expected them to play a little bit sharper. And, you know, I was a firm believer in the Carr for MVP train. The last couple games, I think he's kind of taken a step back to the pack. And depending on how these next 2 weeks go, I mean, I'm not going to be furious if he doesn't get the MVP, but I definitely think he's still in the conversation. But I would like to see him finish out the next two games just a little bit sharper than we've seen these last couple weeks.
Well, there you have it. Huge win for the Oakland Raiders, especially coupled with all of the losses. Monty, I believe you're out of town getting ice cream or something like that, so I'm going to let you get back to that.
One thing that I'd like to throw out there before we cancel, last week, Bosa left the game and he was questionable to play today. He did come in and play today. He ended up getting a sack. And I know that their injuries bug has hit San Diego. And if you look at the receivers that Phillip Rivers had to work with today, I mean, they're just not very good. I think that team, you know, is going to come back next year and be on top of it. And from everything I've seen from Bosa, I think the kid's the real deal. And the pass rushers in the AFC West are phenomenal. And I think he's going to be the next one on the list. Like, he's playing well. He looks like he's going to be a force, and he wasn't even at 100% today.
All right, this is Justin, the Seahawks fan, here with the very frequently victorious Kevin, the Cowboys fan. Kevin, how are you doing right now?
I'm doing well. As I briefly told you, it was a little more stressful than I would have liked coming down at the end, but our defense held up. I'm very impressed with them tonight. So right now I'm doing well. I'm doing very well, though.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that defense. You know, it was Jameis Winston had a pretty big third quarter, but really seemed to clamp down your team defensively in the fourth quarter. Who was that pass rusher that I kept see wreaking havoc?
Yeah, David Irving. I mean, he was the last 3-4 Tampa Bay possessions. He was in the backfield seemingly almost every play. Everywhere you looked, he was in Winston's face, putting Guster chairless on his behind there. So that was fun to watch as a Cowboys fan, because I'm not accustomed to seeing such pass rushing savvy, and for such a prolonged periods of time in the game. So that was a pleasant surprise, and it was great. I could talk about that all night, but yeah, David Irving coming up clutch there. He also had a very big game against the Packers. He forced three fumbles in that game. One of the main reasons our defense was able to hold Aaron Rodgers in check there too. So he has the potential, but he's more of a role player. He's not an every down player. But he definitely has shown flashes and spurts this season. So it's good to see. We'll definitely take it. And another person I just wanted to mention on the defensive side, one of our off-season acquisitions, Benson Mayoa, who we got from the Raiders for a fairly cheap price. We were really hoping he would make an impact on the edge for the pass rush, and he hasn't really done much. But over the last couple of games, I think he has 3 or 4 sacks. So it's also good to see him coming on strong. He did have a little bit of an injury bug early in the year, but he really did nothing the first 8-9 weeks of the season. So it's good to see him coming to play and bring a little of that edge speed pass that we thought he might when we acquired him this offseason. So overall, I was really impressed with this Cowboys defense, and I'm a pretty harsh critic about them. But Dak also played amazingly well tonight. It's good to see him bounce back super strong when people are just starting to doubt him for not really any good reason. I mean, it's the NFL. They doubt everyone. I mean, even Tom Brady in 2013 after that Chiefs game or whatever, people were starting to doubt him. So if you lose in the NFL, you're going to get doubted. So,
oh yeah, especially as the quarterback. And yeah, I'm glad to hear you mention Benson Mayoa. He was a former Seahawk. He was one of those guys that would just really flash in the preseason and look like a guy who could really be a stud pass rusher, but never quite put it together during the regular season, which is why he kind of bounced around. Glad to hear he's found a home. And yeah, Dak Prescott is definitely one of the stories of this game. I mean, if you look the three prior games, you know, he didn't even throw for 200 yards in any of those games. And then all of a sudden today, he has a historically efficient day. Throws for almost 90%. It goes 32 for 36 for 280 yards. Like, yeah, there, you know, he wasn't chucking bombs anywhere, but that's 32 of 36. That's crazy.
I mean, he was on point tonight. I mean, there's no way to say it. There was no misstep in his game tonight. He did everything that we could have asked him to do tonight. So just like I was starting to talk about, I mean, after the Giants game, people were starting, not anyone intelligent per se, but of course everyone's going to get down on him. We've been a little off, admittedly, the last few weeks on offense, and we definitely got back on track there. I mean, we were still a little bit shaky on third down. We started the game off 5 of 7 on third down, I believe, and I think we finished 5 or 6 of 13. So we sort of slowed down there at the end, but we definitely improved offensively from our struggles the last 2 or 3 weeks. So that was good to see. And Dak Prescott, I mean, there's not much more you can say about the guy. Let's just see what he has in the playoffs. I mean, he's answered seemingly every test that the NFL has thrown at him. He wasn't expecting to start this year, and then one fateful play in Seattle, and he's thrown into the starting job, the Dallas quarterback starting job. Not an easy task to handle, like just to have the poise or the presence to handle that from the media perspective, let alone the X's and O's of the game. So you can't really say enough about Dak. He's been phenomenal. I mean, you see Carson Wentz. People were talking about Dak and Wentz offensive rookie of the year the first month and a half of the season. Carson is, well, everyone knows what Carson's doing. But you can't – I'm going to – I sound like a broken record here. But, yeah, Dak, can't say enough about him. As a Cowboys fan, you're just thrilled. You just see hopefully a stable organization for the next 10 years so with Dak. So just – right now, I'm feeling pretty high.
And, you know, Ezekiel Elliott had a great day, too. 23 carries, 159 yards. Both are playing absolutely great. But, on the Power Rank show with Neil a few weeks ago, I mentioned that I think Ezekiel Elliott is probably my front runner for offensive rookie of the year, potentially MVP at this point. The two of them, if that's your foundation going forward, you're in great shape. I mean, you could let's talk a little bit about the Buccaneers, though. I mean, you know, they were going up against the team with the best record in all of football, and they made a game out of it. What did you see out of the Buccaneers? I think they're a team on the rise.
They are definitely a team on the rise. They definitely surprised me a bit. I mean, I knew they were going to present a challenge. I mean, you mentioned they were coming in hot, winners of five straight. We got off to a 14-point lead there, and I thought it was going to be pretty easy sailing the rest of the night. But let's give the Buccaneers and Jameis credit. They bounced back. They even took the lead there going into the fourth quarter. So they stuck around. They really made me sweat this one out. I mean, the third quarter, they came out when they were down 17-13 to take the lead 20-17. They executed a no-huddle offense. They just pretty much did whatever they want against the Cowboys. They worked the deep middle of the field. Humphreys was, and Cameron Brate were having a lot of success there. That's one thing about the Cowboys. If you can keep them on the field and get first down after first down and do what the Buccaneers did and sort of up the tempo, not have Rod Marinelli switch up his defensive line rotation, which he loves to have 7-8 people who come in fresh, because we don't have one particular stud defensive lineman who's always in the backfield causing havoc, despite what you saw from the David Irving the last quarter and a half of the game. But usually we don't have that. So Rod Marinelli loves to switch up the rotation. And when we can't get off the field and make substitutions, we get tired. We can't get to the quarterback. And Jameis was able to buy some time. He's sensational outside of the pocket. I mean, Collinsworth was briefly saying he leads the NFL in passer rating when he's outside the pocket. And it was by a good 20 points. So Jameis Winston is a very exciting player to watch. I mean, but that's also why he tends to make mistakes. He did throw three picks today. I mean, the one at the end of the half, I'm not going to really say anything negative about that. He was trying to throw Hail Mary there. So really two picks. But the Buccaneers are definitely a team on the rise. Definitely something to look forward to in the NFC South with the Falcons and the Bucks duel it out the last 2 weeks. But overall, I'm very happy the Cowboys pulled that one out, especially with the Giants winning there. Only being one game ahead of them would not give me a good night's sleep.
I'm sure. Well, with that big win for the Cowboys, you guys definitely have the inside track to the number one seed. Hopefully that is enough to give you sweet dreams. And with that, I'm going to leave you. Thank you very much, Kevin.
All right. Thank you.
All right, everybody. That's going to do it for this week's episode of the Next Fan Up podcast. Thank you to all these super fans for contributing. Thank you to Nick for doing most of the work hosting the show thus far. Thank you to Pod Vader for inventing this whole dang thing. I'm sure he will have a review posted of the new Star Wars movie sometime soon. That's the sort of thing you're probably into if your name is Pod Vader. I also want to point out that the Titans, the Buccaneers, and the Lions are three of the most interesting teams in the NFL right now. Three teams on the rise with a lot going on. And unfortunately, they don't have super fans. So please, 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 if you are interested in this team, if you want to talk about that team, if you have a buddy who does, have them let us know. Email us, nextfanup@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @NFUpodcast. You can also reach us on our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com, where we have all sorts of cool original content getting posted. Please like us, tweet us, share us, do all that stuff. Spread the word about this podcast by the fans for the fans. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jeff Fisher, who has been promoted from head coach to fan. Maybe he would be our Titans super fan. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.
Touchdown, Kansas City!